Lend Me Your Ears, the Oral Dramaturgies Podcast. The Gallery, interviews with artists.
Hello, welcome to The Gallery. Our guest today is the Hungarian artist, director and designer, Esther Kalman. She has had a long-standing collaboration as a designer with Budapest's Josef Katona Theatre and has also worked as a set and costume designer with independent companies and directors such as Robert Alfoldi. Since 2011, she has been creating her own productions, mainly for the Truffle House of Contemporary Art. Kalman has received multiple awards and accolades for her artistic work, including the Hungarian Theatre Critics Award for the Best Costume Design for Mary Stuart in 2014 and an Audience Choice Award in 2016 for her production of The Lake. She has been featured as one of the top three female designers by the Hungarian edition of the Elle magazine, and in 2019 she represented Hungary in the Prague Quadrennial with the installation Infinite Dune, co-created with a team of artists, which also won the Best Installation Award. In this interview, we talk about her 2020 piece, Domestic Noise, a sound puppetry show which Kalman created with her husband, actor Zoltan Friedenthal. We also learn about her unusual developmental journey, which I have followed since our share time at the University of Bristol Drama Department in the mid-2000s, and we find out about the joys and challenges of working in present-day Hungary as an unaffiliated, multidisciplinary artist and theatre maker. This interview took place between Balaton Kense and London on the 3rd of June 2020 via Zoom. What's interesting to me about you as an artist in Hungary is the way in which you brought in this way of working into the Hungarian context, which has been shaped and maybe influenced and informed by your studies of performance studies in Bristol, and how you've then had to contend with the local ecology in Hungary and how you've had to fit in and find your way in. And you've sent me recordings of two of your recent performances that you've made, one of which is called Domestic Noises. The approach you take there is about kind of working with sounds primarily, with another performer on a very elaborately designed set. But it would be interesting to maybe find out more about what impetus there was and what the story that you're trying to tell is.
Yeah.
It's presented in a double bill, is that right?
Yes, and I designed the other one or helped designing the other one. It's called Quad. It's based on the Samuel Beckett Quad. Mm-hmm. And it was directed by a friend of mine who is a contemporary composer, mainly working in theater. Mm-hmm. And actually, both of them, we were like together as a team. Mm-hmm. Even the man who's performing in mine, who's my husband, by the way, he's performing in the other one as well. And he, the composer guy, helped with our sound bits as well. So it was like an ensemble type of work, but it was the two directors was me, and for the other one, it was him.
Were they commissioned by any particular organization or festival, or were they
was funded by Truffle, which is the contemporary house of arts here in Hungary. And also it was funded by this thing that is for young artists, and my previous work, The Lake, which you saw the trailer for, that was also, it's like co-funded by Truffle and this thing. It's called Staffeta. I don't know what that could be in English. You know the stick when they're running at the Olympics and they're giving the stick to each other, so they go in turns, and yes, that stick is called this. And
Staffeta, so, it's the same in Serbian, it's the same word. I know what you mean. We had the same thing. So it's the Button. Yes, button.
So it's called the Button funded performances, but now it's an open call every year when a committee chooses the works, and it's specifically made for artists who are not part of big companies and they are not state funded. They are freelancer theater makers like myself. Because there it used to be like a huge gap, like we didn't get any fundings from nowhere. So that's that. And the work came about that this friend of mine, his name is Tomasz Matko. We were working together. Well, actually, it has to go back to my set designer background. So I was a set designer in Austria, in Graz, in a production. An Austrian production. I was the set designer and he was the composer. And then obviously we went out a lot. And then at one evening, he just told me this idea of his about Beckett Squad and how he wants to compose, like how he was interested in the choreography of all that and how the choreography makes noise itself, how they step, how they do stuff. And he was particularly interested in cooking and cooking sounds and how that can be somehow involved. And he was talking about very early works of John Cage, but he just said it like as a dream, like as he would never even start to think about getting funding for that. Like he's not in that world. And then I started thinking about something based on sound as well. And so when Truffle asked me what my next move would be, I said that, well, I don't like this pressure of doing like a whole evening performance. I suffer from that pressure every time. Also suffer from the pressure to fill up 300 seats per performance. And I can't even do that. I mean, I can do it a few times, but not more. Like I don't have an audience base. So I said that I would like to like maybe do a double bill like this and do 2 half-an-hour very experimental pieces. And they were very open for it. And then we went for the, what did you say? What was the staffeta?
Baton.
The baton funding. And then we won it. So,
Great.
So then we could make it. Yeah. So that was the story of how it came about.
Let me just take it back a bit before. You did the degree in performance studies at the drama department at the University of Bristol.
Yeah.
And I remember you arriving to the University of Bristol as a photographer. So is that a significant bit of this story? Because you chose to study performance making in the UK, but you already had a pre-existing creative practice that didn't necessarily fit anywhere.
Yes.
But what made you choose to study performance in a British university rather than anything that was on offer at Hungary at the time? And this was just to get the time right. This was 2006.
I really wanted to be, I think because I didn't know else, I wanted to be a director because in Hungary, as you say, like in Germany, there are like very precise categories you can get into. But my interest wasn't based on text ever, but it was more based on the visuals and the visual elements of theater always. And even my photography practice was mainly interested in dance photography. And it just didn't seem to happen for me here in Hungary. Like it wouldn't now either. It's not evolving in terms of, I don't know, new wave education in theater practice. So they just didn't get what I wanted at all. And I was always interested in just being in London or being in England. And I spent a month there when I was 15 and I really loved it. And I think in my personal life, like the person who I was living with at the time, he went for an MA to Leeds in film. So it just made sense to then just go, and particularly Bristol, because the film and the theater was in parallel for a while, like for the first year or something, I can't remember. Yeah. So that made me think that maybe they understand my way of thinking about that visual thinking in terms of narrative if they have the theater and the film together. And it proved me right, so, and I got in, which was a miracle. Two of my peers, we made The Red Shoes by Hans Christian Andersen, but we made it without any human being on stage. So it was just objects and costume pieces and set pieces moved and shadows. And the experiment itself was very interesting. And even though I think it failed in terms of the original approach, that can you understand the narrative if there is no human being on stage? And I don't think you could understand the narrative. You could understand a narrative, but not the. So when an opportunity came up again, like a miracle here in Hungary at Truffle, I wanted to follow this experiment and make it right.
And what was this opportunity at Strafe, and when did it happen?
It happened in, I finished university in 2009, and this was in 2011, I think. It was a bit, I don't know, it wasn't frightening not knowing anybody in this field here when I moved back, but so I just thought that I can't really like start anything unless I just really do it myself. So I made a performance in my own flat, and it was very fortunate that the head of Truffle came and watched it. And she really liked it. And she said that it shows her a way of thinking or a way of theatrical approach that she doesn't really see here in Hungary. And she would like to like explore more about my stuff.
Tell us a bit more about that performance. What form did it take, and what was the concept?
It was about a girl who, like, the audience went into the flat, like the empty flat, and then she arrived home, and then she made a pregnancy test, and it was positive. And you could only hear her talk if she was on the phone, either with her mother or with the boyfriend who really wanted to come over, but she wasn't sure what to do. So then there was this argument. She went to sleep. And then when the audience left, the guy was ringing the doorbell downstairs. And so it was the two-parted. And then the next part was a week later. Same time the week later. So the same audience came up to my flat, and it started with her being in the flat with a child. So it looked like that we just jumped in time and she had the baby. But then the child's mother arrived, and it turned out that she was only babysitting, and she was just preparing herself for the abortion in the morning.
So you wrote this piece and directed it?
Yes, but it wasn't really like anything written. It was improvised, and it was, I think I just gave like points what to follow and what to include, and then we fixed that. So it was maybe a bit improvised, but we sort of fixed it.
In terms of design, was this also an element of this piece? Was the design aspect of the experience, in terms of visual design, something that was an
important? Well, it was not as the main element. Like, it was my flat. Like, I didn't change anything about it. But in terms of how time works in, like, a time narrative of the set, like, you could see images, like, in framed images in the flat of her and the boyfriend, and those changed after the week. And there was this light bulb, which I'm sure you remember, because I remember telling you about it, that the light bulb was out in the first part, but it was on, it was a new light bulb in the second. So little bits like that, I would say it's like a, some sort of the narrative way of the visual element was working towards the story, but not in terms of the actual mise-en-scene wasn't as strong.
So the director of Trafo Theatre saw it.
Yes, and she was the artistic director at the time, I think.
What and was now, her name?
Her name is Beata Barda. And she's the head now. By now, she's the top.
What was the opportunity she offered you on that occasion?
I think she said that I can do anything.
At Trafo, I think that's Theater. What
she, yeah, I think she said that. If I wanted to do something, just tell her and I can do it.
So what was the thing that you did in response to that?
So I did a same concept as the Red Shoes, but I did it with the Cinderella story. And I used video projections as well. She found an opportunity to build the performance into the Tom Dimash Festival that was at the time. So it was the International Visual Theater Festival that gave opportunities to young artists to do like a minimum 20 minutes, maximum 30 minutes piece, which was ideal. So I think it was like 24 minutes or something. And then it was so successful that they funded like a full version of it for the next year. And then I finished it and I improved it a bit.
And then that led to you developing a practice as both a performance maker and a designer working with other directors on more conventional work in theater.
Yeah, the more conventional career of being a designer was actually a separate route. I mean, I'm sure this helped, but I think it's the other way around. So my set designer route helps always the theater making route. And that was based on, I think we had to go to industrial placements from Bristol. And I knew I was probably going to move to back to Budapest. So I asked to do my industrial placement there, to start building connections. And I went to this very famous artistic theater called Katona József Színház. And I did my placement there. And from there, I made the connections and started working as, I was a production assistant in independent companies. And then I had the opportunity to go to the Merlin Theater, which was like halfly international and worked with British artists at the time.
This was Laszlo Magas.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was his assistant and then worked as even like the English-speaking dramaturg, working with those actors. And from these, I started to somehow build a base for set designing, and then I just picked up on the costume as well.
And when you think about the journey of your own creative practice, that where you are the kind of the director of your work as well, how did that evolve from that point on? What was the next step in your journey from that Trafo Cinderella?
I tried to direct a text-based play, also like a flat situation. It was, I think it's Stephen Belber's play called Tape, which is originally in a motel room. So I did that, and then it just really proved me how my concepts are or can be great, but the actual working with the actors and text and analyzing and helping them through that is really not my strength at all. I was asked to do something else as well, and that proved even more that this is not my way mm-hmm. of theater making. And very interestingly, those two were the most watched and successful in terms of audience, obviously. But in any other artistic respect, they were not good, like not even close to, I want to be modest, but the uniqueness of my usual work as a theater maker in Hungary, I wouldn't want to do that anymore. I wouldn't want to experience that failure every day in a rehearsal room.
So then what did you do as a result?
I started thinking how different elements are interesting to me, like all the theatrical elements, how they can build up narrative. I mean, even in Cinderella, that was the case, like how all those elements can work with the story, supporting it, telling it. And then started examining genres even, and did a whole production about Marquis de Sade, Justine, as a pop musical. That was a big one, very big failure, by the way. But I really loved it. We all loved it who were working on it. We really, really loved it.
When was that?
I don't know, maybe 2014 okay. or 13. No, 13, because I directed something in every 2 years. That was that. So 11 was the Cinderella, and then 13 was that. And then 15, I did a performance called N Like Nosferatu that was experimenting with puppetry. And it was only one puppet artist on stage, but all the other characters were puppets or objects or piece of clothing but the Justine was a very visual performance as well, because the actors were sort of like puppets themselves singing, and then there were video projections on everybody everywhere. It was all over the place.
What made that more fun in terms of working with the actors than the ones where you were working on text?
I think it was because of the music. Mm-hmm. It was the music and the visual, and how with the help of the video projections, it was building new narratives that they were sort of like underlining it with the music and the singing, or the both were like maybe equal, but the music and the emotions of the music was leading the narrative and not the actual words.
Did you choose all the music for it? Did you actually do the kind of libretto for it, or did you work with other?
No, I worked with other artists, mm-hmm. of course. Like my husband worked on the music as well as a fantastic composer called Árpád Kákonyi. Mm-hmm. And I had a dramaturg who worked in all of these projects. I think Cinderella not, but then from then on in all of them, and he did the libretto. And it was just a great fun for everybody. There were dancers in it. It was really good. It was very good fun. Mm-hmm. I'm very sad that they didn't like it. And I thought it would be great abroad as well, like touring.
When you say they didn't like it, was this the critics or the audiences?
Well, the audiences were like half and half, but it was very either hating or loving it. There wasn't anything in the middle. Critics, they don't often come to see my shows. The few that I had was also either loving or hating, but Truffaut didn't like it.
Was that the first time with the pop opera that you worked with sound as an element?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, definitely. I mean, obviously in Cinderella I worked with it, but it was, the emphasis wasn't, because it was so many elements together. But for this one, yes, most definitely. It was mostly the sound. And then obviously after that in Nosferatu, it was the puppetry and the visuals.
Shall we just to it.
And then because I got so interested in puppetry, then I did this performance called The Lake in 2017. That was based on a puppet artist and a dancer, and it was experimenting with how similar and different those two genres are. Of being a choreographed movement of a human body or a non-human body, but they are still doing the same choreography. It was a wonderful project that we were in love with, and it was the most successful thing I've ever done. It went on and on for 2 seasons.
So the lake refers to the Swan Lake.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. It was very vaguely following the narrative of the Swan Lake. Yes, mm-hmm. But it was from their improvisations. Like I had made like a structure that can work, and in the structure, like based on the actual scenes of the Swan Lake, I made up situations where the two can like confront each other.
And the puppet and the dancer.
Yeah, the puppet and the dance. And then we took that structure into the rehearsal room. And for 1 week, I only rehearsed with the puppet artist and another week with the dancer. And they never met, like they didn't know each other. And then, so after 2 weeks, we put them together when they had an idea of what this is all about. They loved each other, and it just became really like a family production from there.
What did it look like for the benefit of the listener? What did it end up being as a piece of theater?
It was a black mirror floor. And that was it, really, like in a black theater space, the black mirror floor. But it was like reflecting everything. It was beautiful. The lights were on floor around it, so nothing was hidden. And then there was this inflatable child pool at the corner where the whole performance started, and then went on to the lake. And then this reflective floor was full of dirty tissues. And those were the swans.
As in being manipulated as puppetry, right?
Well, you could just like have a look at it and think that, oh, this is a lake with full of swans. And then it was obviously moved. Yes, it was animated, yeah. And then it was, then sometimes it was working as dirty tissues in a dance rehearsal room. Like there was a scene when the guy, the puppet artist, was like a cleaner and like sweeping them off while the girl after a dance workout was like blowing her nose and throwing them away. So we used it in so many ways. But I really needed their creativity in it as well. Like I can't say that it was all me. I think the concept was me, but they really helped me fill it up with their own talent, really.
So am I right in thinking then that the next step after the lake was this domestic noises piece?
Yes.
where you actually build the narrative of the piece through sound. So
yes,
the piece, they literally are domestic noises, and we hear the first noises in darkness, and they sound like brushing teeth and having sex. And and then when the lights come up, the narratives of the two performers unfold in sync with each other or against each other around this long counter, which could function as a kitchen counter or a bathroom counter.
Yes.
And is very carefully lit and looks beautiful as well on stage. So how did you develop that piece, and what was the dramaturgical conceptualization of that?
So first, I just knew that I would want to now experiment with sound and specifically noises, but I wasn't sure really about the form. It wasn't domestic at first at all, so it could have been anything. And then I thought that maybe it should be about like a man and a woman, to give like a more of a dynamic, or not to be heavily relying on telling like a specific story, but just telling maybe emotions. And then I thought that, okay, so because my husband usually is the composer of my pieces, but he's an actor in normal life, so he's doing the composing as a hobby. And he's a well-known actor here.
And what's his name?
His name is Zoltán Friedenthal. So then I thought that, okay, so because he's going to work on the sounds, like he can be in it as an actor. So that's great. But then how will I, what will I say to any actress? Like, there are no good instructions in it. And it's not even an acting, like not in a normal way of an acting job. So how can I approach that? It would be awkward. And then I thought that, okay, so then might as well be me, which I've never done, like I've never performed. And I think even in Bristol, I try to avoid that situation most of the times. So then I thought that, but if it's us on stage, then it has to be real. Like it has to be domestic and it has to be about our everyday. So this is how it came about. First, I thought that we're going to have like a map of a flat outlined with white in the black space. So we would have outlined all the rooms. And then in each room would be like those paper boxes where you put your stuff when you're moving. And then we would like take out the stuff that we're making noises with in each room. And then it would be like a conflict about having children or not yet. And that would be like a trying to make the outline of a new room and then taking it up and then putting it down and then taking it up. But then we went into the rehearsal room. By the way, I think it was only a 2 weeks rehearsing period. And we went in and it was just impossible to do all of that on the floor. Like even that we are very into Japanese culture. We went to Japan in our honeymoon, but we just couldn't do it on the floor at all. Like it was hurting and it wasn't working. So then we had to start using tables. And then that's how the shape of it came, that we were forced to do it. It was more comfortable, really. And also it felt like we were rehearsing in a very white space, I remember. And then it really felt like a lab, like we took half of the stuff from home, the actual stuff from the kitchen and the bathroom, into this white space and then putting it out on white tables. And I felt that we are like lab workers trying to like make little noises, and what do you think this sounds like? It was crazy. that's how the shape and the stage came.
And you use a series of microphones as well, and then you are kind of creating noises in different ways with different objects. So in a way, it's puppetry as well, isn't it? In a way, it's
definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And it was a big dilemma of using a camera and the projection of close-ups of our hands as well. And I felt that it would take the emphasis on the actual dynamics of us. Like, I felt that there are so many little nuances in our reactions to each other, not in terms of the noise, but in terms of us and our energy, that if, and it's just so short, and sometimes these noise-making things are so short that while an audience member have to look up and down and look up and down, it will be lost. And so I didn't want to do that.
So you decided against the projections, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but you're right, it is puppetry. And also, I guess because you watched it on the recording, is obviously it has close-ups of what we're doing. Sometimes I recorded the rehearsals and watched it back to see what we're doing and what it needs.
So maybe it would work better as a film than as a live performance, in a way. Maybe it works ideally for the COVID time when people are watching live streamed performances, you know.
We were just talking about it today, how there is this sequence of it when we are irritating each other with, like, I don't know, cutting fingernails and stuff like that. And then how different it will have, like, a little more depth now after this pandemic.
Yes. And so you performed it live already.
Yeah.
How many times?
Twice.
And how did it go down with the audience?
Very well, I have to say. There wasn't as many people as my previous works, but I think it just really frightened people how a performance based on sounds, like it really wasn't very catchy, this idea. But a lot of people from the industry came, which was interesting, like much more than usually. So I felt that maybe it's because of Tamás as well, that it was his debut. But I felt like a more openness than in the previous years, most definitely. And also, that's why I'm saying that it really, my designer career being as it is really helping these.
So you were planning a festival of sound based.
Yeah, it's just, yes. Sometimes Truffle tries to schedule performances that can be themed together, or giving out opportunity for ticket sales that if you buy tickets to certain types of performances, then you get like a deal or something. So it's just like a theme schedule, I would say, not like a big festival. But then I thought that because they are inviting from all over the world, so really it's, I would say, half international performances there, half Hungarians, if not more internationals. Like DV8 used to come, and Forced Entertainment, but it was a while ago now, unfortunately.
But Esther, can I actually ask you? I think it's difficult for me not to ask you, considering that you are a Hungarian artist I'm talking to, about the political situation of being an artist in Hungary at the moment. To what extent is this what you're noticing as a lack in Hungarian theatre of the international representation linked to this? And in what other ways are artists affected by the current political situation that you have with Orban, Viktor Orban in Hungary?
I think it's very difficult to say how much of us are affected by directly, but I would say as the more liberal side of the industry, we are suffering a lot from it. Like our fundings are not great. Like I think even like the theater's funding cut back brutally. More and more independent companies, they just died. They had to like close down. There's only a few of them left, which means more unemployed people, more freelancers, less work, less opportunities, less money as a salary. If you do get a job, then you have to have like four at the time to make a good living. And it's not getting any better for us. It's not. It's really difficult to talk about it without being very angry or very emotional or whatever, or being very clear or very objective even. But this whole nationalist approach towards life and culture and education and everything is just so strong now that if you don't stand in that line, you're not proving them right. You're nothing. You can do it, but you can do it if you can fund yourself. That's what they say, that you're free to do it, but then you don't get any funding, you don't get any opportunities. The theaters that are alive still and working and have liberal leaders are like fighting constantly against this. And there were like now public demonstrations and all that, but it's not helping at all. I don't see the end of it yet. But I do realize maybe that maybe the other regime, my side, was maybe too rigorous about their own liberal thinking and their own artistic values and didn't let others into the center. Mm-hmm. So you can feel a lot of, again, ego in the whole thing, and it smells like revenge in every aspect of it, politically, culturally, everywhere. So it's not very good, no.
So sorry to hear that.
Like if you want to get fundings now for your financial loss now during the pandemic, you have to promise them in writing to do something like a nationalist performance. And it's absolutely normal now to say that out loud officially.
So in a way, making work that is experimental in other ways is already resistance, you know, like your work, yes, even though it's not explicitly political, it kind of resists this official line that requires you to be nationalist in a way.
Yes, you could say that, or even if it's not provocatively doing that, so, but just by working in a certain theater, you put yourself on one side, yes, which is just, I think it's just horrendous, really.
So how do you envisage the Sound Theater Festival then?
I just watched this Complicité performance online. And then I thought that, oh, that's something that could be easily invited because it's only one person on stage. And just thought of our productions, that it's quite small scale, that I just thought that maybe there are other performances dealing with this that could be on a normal scale that is invitable. And then I just approached Truffle with this idea that what if I find other performances then would be interesting to then create this theme. And then they said, yeah, just show us what you found, and then it's interesting.
Great.
You've been listening to Lend Me Your Ears, presented by Duška Radosavljević, curated by Flora Petrolo, and produced by Tim Bano. The Lend Me Your Ears podcast is part of Oral Dramaturgies, an AHRC leadership fellowship held by Duška Radosavljević at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama.